Imam Sadiq Online Seminary. Website www.imamsadiq.tv. Subject Ahkam 1. Book Islamic Law. Teacher Sheikh Muhammad Baqir Nijad. Lesson number 3.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله My dear friends, brothers and sisters Welcome to the third class of Ahkam In the last class, we talked about the little bit about the history of our fiqh. Where does our fiqh come from? What is the source of our ahkam? And we say that the main source is, of course, Quran, but not everything, no, not every single detail of our ahkam or Islamic law is mentioned in the apparent meanings of Quran. So we are in desperate need of our Holy Prophet to come and explain to us, you know, to come and explain these details. And then after the Holy Prophet, we are in need of the Imams to continue that that responsibility. Now, we say that, you know, at the time of Imams, alayhim as-salam, the Shias used to ask their questions from the Imams, alayhim as-salam. Even in very hard situations of taqiyya, Shias used to take their questions to Imams and ask them. In one case, as I gave you that example, someone was, a Shia was pretending to be an oil seller and undercover. He was working basically undercover. He was representative of Imam, and he used to take the letters from the Shias who had questions from the Imam and take them to Imam Hadi alayhi salam, for example. So the Shias, basically, they tried to their best to ask the questions from the Imam, Imams alayhi salam. Now, how about now, after the presence of Imams alayhi salam, after the occultation, the start of the occultation of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala fajrul sharif? How about this time? What should we do in regards to knowing our Islamic laws? How should we learn them? Well, of course, the sources have not changed. The sources of our Islamic laws are the Quran and the beautiful narrations or the sayings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wassalam. But of course, we do not have, like people who have not reached the level of ijtihad. Inshallah, we'll talk about ijtihad more in detail. Mujtahid, or someone who has reached the level of ijtihad, is someone who is capable of driving the Islamic laws from its sources. So he can go and look into Quran, he can look into narrations, and tell us, okay, according to Islam, what we can include is that, for example, morning prayer is 2 rak'ah. Dhuhr prayer is 4 rak'ah, for example. If you have a doubt between 3rd rak'ah and the 4th rak'ah and the 4 rak'ah prayer, this is what you should do and this is what you should not do, for example. He is basically, mujtahid is the one who can refer to our sources in the time of occultation you're talking. He can refer to the sources like Quran and the narrations and derive the and deduce the Islamic laws, and he would give a fatwa. Now, by giving fatwa, he's not saying that this is the literal and the exact words of Allah Ta'ala, but what he's saying is that, look, by studying the Quran and the words of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, this is what I have end up with. This is what I have concluded, that the word of Allah, or the basically the responsibility that we have in this regard, is such and such. So when a mujtahid, when a scholar gives a fatwa, he's not claiming that he is basically giving us the exact words of Allah Ta'ala. He's not claiming to be an imam. No, none of that. He's just saying that, I have studied for 40 years, right? And, I have referred to the words of Allah and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and I have concluded that this is the Islamic law that we need to follow. So, in this time, at the time of occultation, we have no choice. Those who are not mujtahid, who are not great scholars, who can, deduce and derive the Islamic laws from its sources, we who are not at that level, we have no choice but to refer to al-Miraj. This is the concept of taqlid, or following the fatwas of a mujtahid. So our mujtahideen, our scholars, they refer to ahkam, they refer to sources, and we follow their views, basically. Of course, when I say their views, I don't mean that the views that they have come up with by their own, out of their own desires or anything like that. No, the views that they have end up with studying Quran and Ahlul Bayt, the words of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wassalam. And, this concept is not in need of any, the concept of taqlid. Unfortunately, nowadays, a lot of those who, in the West, especially those who claim themselves akhbari or things like that, they come and say, why should we follow a marja? Why should we do this? Why? We can refer to our sources, we can refer to narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam ourselves, and know what to do and not to do. Why are we in need of following a mujtahid? Unfortunately, they are not thinking. These people who have these, bring up these type of shubahat or questions, they are not thinking. This is the way that we all human beings live in this life. For example, if God forbid, you have a sickness, right? You get a sickness. What do you do? Do you go, you say, okay, I have a sickness, so I have to go to university, study for 8 or 10 years, until I become a good professional doctor, so I can figure out what's wrong with my body, so I can cure myself. Is that how you live your life? Or when you have a sickness and you're not a doctor, you refer to a professional doctor. You ask people, do you know a professional doctor, right? And you search for it. And when you find such a person, you go to his office or, his clinic, and, tell him what's wrong with your body, and he can tell you what's your sickness and how we can cure it. So this is how we do, how we live in our life. This is the style that we live, all of us. Imagine if you wanted to build a house, and for that, you said, okay, I'm going to build this house. I need to be a good engineer, so I'm going to go to university, study for 4 or 5 years to become an engineer. I need to draw, I need to be an architect, so I need to study in university in order to become an architect. So, and after studying so many years, and after I become a good and professional, construction worker and engineer and architect, I'll build my house. No, this is not how we live, right? If you want to build a house, you ask and you call an engineer or construction company, you tell them, please come, build my house, right? So, in every field, the point is that, in every field, we refer to the specialist, we refer to the professional in that object, in that subject, in that field. Same thing when it comes to Islamic laws. When you are confronted with, an issue, a religious issue that you want to know, okay, what's the Islamic ruling about it? Is this thing wajib or haram? Is this mustahab or makruh? What do you do? Should you go into hawza? Should you necessarily go to hawza and study for 40, 50 years until you become a very good, inshallah, and knowledgeable mujtahid and a scholar in Islamic laws in order for you to figure out, okay, what's that case? You know, what's the ruling in regards to that case? No. Not everyone have to do that. Some people, you know, selected people, they become great scholars. And others, they follow these great scholars. We call them the maraja or the mujtahideen. Right? So this concept of referring to a professional in the field, it exists in everyone's, in every human being, you know, the life of every human being. So it is not in need of any ayah of Quran that comes and tells us, okay, you need to refer to a marja when you want to know your Islamic law. It's obvious. It's common sense. Everyone understands that this is what we should know when we want to know our Islamic laws. And as we have in the narration of we have this narration from Imam alayhi salam says, فَأَمَّا مَنْ كَانَ مِنَ الْفُقَهَا صَائِنًا لِنَفْسِهِ حَافِظًا لِدِينِهِ مُخَالِفًا عَلَى هَوَاهِ مُطِيعًا لِأَمْرِ مَوْلَاهِ فَلِلْعَوَامِ أَنْ يُقَلِّدُوهِ. Imam alayhi salam says that amongst people, amongst the scholars, those who are faqih, those who have reached the highest level of, you know, knowledge in hawza, and they are sa'ina li nafsi, they protect their nafs, their soul from committing sins, and they basically are pious people who are protecting their religion. Basically, they do not commit sins and they do not follow their worldly desires, and they are a good follower of their imam. These people, these fuqaha, these top scholars must be followed by others who are awam, those who are not in that level. Those people should follow these fuqaha. So, the concept of ijtihad, the concept of taqlid is very understandable, and it's basically common sense. Some people say, well, isn't it that one of the sources of our religion, of our Islamic law, is aql or intellect? I have intellect too. I have aql. Why can't I just follow myself? I just sit down, think about, you know, the cases, and I just follow whatever comes to my mind. Right? No, that's not the case. When, you know, usually it's mentioned that the sources of our Islamic law or fiqh or jurisprudence, is a better word to say, the sources of our jurisprudence are, of course, first of all, Quran, secondly, hadith or narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, Prophet Muhammad and Ahlul Bayt, third, aql or intellect, and four, ijma'. Now, each and every one of these sources must be explained in a good manner that you understand what are the restrictions in regards to these, what are the conditions, in what cases, how is ijma', for example, a proof for us, what is ijma', in what cases, for example, ijma' is a hujjah or proof for us as Islamic, as a source of Islamic law. Ijma basically means the consensus of our scholars on an issue. Or for example, when we mention that aql is one of the sources of our religion, what do we mean by that? These things will be, inshallah, studied in usul al-fiqh. Inshallah, when you reach that level, you know, after you finish these muqaddamat, these prerequisites of usul al-fiqh, which means the principles of jurisprudence and, you know, the jurisprudence. When you finish these muqaddamat, inshallah, you get to usul al-fiqh, you will study these, you know, sources, inshallah, there. And you will see that when we mention intellect or aql is one of the sources of our Islamic laws, it's not like, you know, anything that comes to our mind. No, when we say that, we refer to the obvious and the the obvious rulings of our aql that everyone accepts. For example, zulm or oppressing others is bad. Everyone accepts. Wherever you go, you ask everyone, is zulm or oppressing others, is it good or bad? Everyone says it's bad. So we say, okay, oppressing others is haram. When we refer to aql, when we mention aql as one of the sources of our Islamic law, you know, that part is very limited. It's not very broad that you can drive everything and basically give a fatwa in regards to every single case based on our pure aql or pure intellect. No, we cannot do that. It doesn't matter how many hours you sit down and think, you cannot understand, you know, how many rak'ah you should pray for morning, right? It doesn't matter how many hours you think and how much, you know, how genius you are, you cannot understand by your pure, you know, aql that whether you should pray, you should fast in the month of Ramadan or you should fast in the month of Sha'ban. You cannot understand that. You have no way but to refer to Quran or hadith, right? So, as I said, when intellect or aql is mentioned as one of the sources, it is very limited and is not as broad as some people think. Now, the next issue that I want to mention is that, okay, so we say that we have to follow a marja as a mukallaf, you know, we are obligated. We have obligations. We know we have obligations when we turn to the age of bulugh, the age that we become mature. For girls is 9 years old. For boys is 15 years old. Of course, you know, based on the lunar calendar. When we reach that age, we know that after that age, we have obligations. We have obligations. What are they? We need to refer to a marja. We need to pick a marja. We will talk about how to choose a marja and all that, inshallah. May Allah bless our, you know, pious scholars and maraja. And everyone, let me say this, everyone as a Shia is free to choose his or her own marja. Even your father cannot come and force you to choose a marja. No. Everyone in our Shia doctrine is free to choose his or her own marja. And, you know, I don't like this. Unfortunately, this culture exists amongst many different Shia communities. They go and ask people, oh, who do you follow? Who do you follow? And by asking these questions, they try to basically put you in a box, right? Oh, if you believe, if you follow such and such marja, this is what you believe. This is the party that you follow. This is your, you know, political view. Come on. This is not how it works. Following a marja, all it means is that you have searched and figured out that such and such marja is the most learned scholar, and you follow him. That's all. It doesn't mean that you should follow his political views. It doesn't mean that you share exactly the same type of aqa'id. It doesn't mean any of that. In the first year of Hawza, the reason why we study jurisprudence or ahkam is to basically have a good understanding of our ahkam, a good view on our ahkam. And we do not want to get into all of the reasonings behind our ahkam. We just want to have a good understanding of, you know, what are the cases that are mentioned in our ahkam, to have a good view on these things. And the ahkam, the fatwas that I give you, I'm not telling you to follow them word by word. Your marja, the marja that you follow, he might have a different opinion than his, and you need to refer to your marja when it comes to action. So Why are we studying this book again? This book is just because it is written for the Western audience. It's not just a translation of Tawdih al-Masail. You know, usually Tawdih al-Masail is the Islamic law book that is written by our scholars. And usually Maraja, the Buyut of Maraja, they just translate that into different languages. This book is not like that. This book has been written for the Western audience by someone who speaks English and lives in the West. So it's a great book to study. And the way it is organized is also different from other Islamic laws books. It's organized in a way that that is more suitable for the Western audience again as well. So that's why, you know, we are studying this book, and inshallah I will try to mention if the views of other scholars, or if there is, for example, any dispute amongst the scholars, you know, I'll try to mention them as well, inshallah. Now, to go back to, you know, the view in regards to understanding or referring to our to a marja, let me point out this you know, issue and this matter to you, and then we'll end up by that, inshallah. See, when it comes to learning Islamic law, right? What did we say in the first class? We said that Islamic theories are divided into two different parts. First part is what we call aqaid. The second part is what we call ahkam. Okay? Now, when it comes to aqaid, again, we have two levels of studies in aqaid. Aqaid means what? Usul al-Din. The things that are in regard to the base of our religion. What we believe in with our heart, like Tawheed, like Prophethood, like Imamah, these things that are the base of our religion. Now, when it comes to aqaid, there are two levels of studies. The first level is basically believing in aqaid, is what we call, you know, to study the aqaid, to know what they are, from its proofs, from its reasonings. We have to, for example, know that why there is only one God. Why there is a prophet? Why do we follow the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam? Why do we follow the Imams? So we have to know them by reasoning. When it comes to aqaid, that's the first level of studies, of studying Islamic laws, which is common and is obligatory for every single person. The second part is basically mostly for the scholars, in which the and it is wajib kifayah, and I'll explain inshallah what this term means inshallah in future. But in this second level of studying aqaid, the scholar tries to basically answer doubts and hard questions on these Islamic doctrine, and he basically tries to, as I said, you know, not only understand the aqaid or Islamic doctrine from its by reasoning, but also try to answer hard questions in this regard. So it's basically a second level of studying aqaid. Now, in ahkam, there is this, you know, there are two parts as well. The first part of our ahkam is basically to know the commonly used ahkam. I should know as a person who as a Muslim and should follow the rules of Allah, I should know how to pray, how to fast, how to go to Hajj and all these things. Right? I should know them. And that this knowledge is common for everyone. Everyone should acquire this knowledge. The second part of Islamic law, the second part of Islamic rulings or ahkam, is the part that is in need of knowing the reasonings behind each and every Islamic law. So I, as an ordinary person, I should know that I should pray 2 rak'ah in for morning. However, the second level of studying ahkam, the scholar goes and figure out why we should pray 2 rak'ah, Right? Why we should pray? 2 rak'ah. For what reason? What are the, you know, basically, what's the source? Which narration talks about this issue? Is that, is that narration an authentic narration or not? So basically, he is able to tell us the asqad in the second level of studying ahkam. The person who studies this part, which are the our maraja, our scholar, our greatest scholars, they tell us, and they are able to tell us why, for what reason, what kind of proofs we have for praying, you know, 2 rak'ah, for example. Why we should fast in the month of Ramadan? Why we should go to Hajj? And so forth and so on. So, and again, this part is wajib kifai. What does wajib kifai mean? Wajib kifai means is an it is a kifai obligation, is a collective duty that is commonly obligatory on every Muslim until a sufficient number of people take up the duty and execute it. So, for example, wajib kifai means that the obligation exists on every single person. Every single person must go and do that job until there is sufficient number of people who have, you know, who have gone and basically performed that job, right? So let me summarize what I said. Lastly, we have in Islamic ma'arif or Islamic ideology is divided into 2 parts: aqaid, which is Islamic doctrine or principle, the usuluddin. The second part is ahkam, or in other words, Islamic law. Each one of these two have 2 parts, two levels of study. The first level of studying in aqaid is to know tawheed, is to know oneness of Allah, prophethood, and these things by reasoning. The second part of, you know, studying in aqaid is to be able to answer the difficult questions and doubts that come up by the followers of other sects or religions. Now, when it comes to Islamic laws, there are also these 2 levels. The first level of studying Islamic law is for every single person. Every single person should know why we should pray, how we should pray, how we should fast, how to perform our duties. The second level of studying, as I mentioned, that is the job, that is wajib kifai. Again, what is wajib kifai mean? It means that it is an obligation upon everyone until we have sufficient number of people who carry out that job, right? So if the, God forbid, if you don't have any marja as of right now, it would be wajib on every single person to go and study in hawza in order to become marja and mujtahid. So we have these 2 levels of studying in aqaid and ahkam. It's very good to understand this part that I mentioned for the later information that I will be giving to you. I will be giving to you, inshallah, in the next lesson. Let us end our lesson by sending salawat for our beloved Imam Amir al-Mu'minin salawatullah wa salamuhu alayhi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali tahirin.
Imam Sadiq Online Seminary. Website www.imamsadiq.tv.